closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
G'day. Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. I'm Simon Coronel.
My name is Nick Butt. Man, you really just you took the lead on that intro. Good for you.
I figured let's mix it up. Let's keep things in flux. Keep it dynamic. That way we don't stagnate into predictable bingo card driven topics.
That's inevitable, but that's okay. You said you're very sleepy, understandably. I filled in for you on Monday at the castle, and you're doing the whole week at the castle. Why don't you tell the good people why you couldn't make it to the castle?
Let's catch up on what's been happening recently. So last week I was doing a cruise ship gig. That's unusual. That never happens. The ship gig was ending in Martinique, the island nation of Martinique in French Caribbean, wherever it is. Yep, that place. And was due to get off the ship early, first thing on the Monday, then fly straight back to LA and do the magic, start a week at the Magic Castle that night. Magic Castle weeks being booked Monday to Sunday. However, it turned out into the cruise as travel back got confirmed that Martinique just didn't have any flights to LA that Monday. Just none. There was no flights. It wasn't that they were canceled. There was none. So unusually, I now had no option but to cool my heels in Martinique for an extra 24 hours to get a flight back the next day. But then it turned out that the flights back next day, even getting up at 4:30 a.m. for a 6 a.m. flight, still couldn't get to L.A. until like 9 p.m., which was too late to do my early parlor shows. So suddenly I found myself with a few days notice having to find replacements for both Monday and Tuesday night. I obviously called Nick first because, you know, podcast bros for life, yay. And this is also back when I knew I'd be missing Monday, but I didn't yet know if I was also missing Tuesday. Like, I wasn't sure. So I knew I had to cover Monday 100%, but then maybe Tuesday. And then Nick could only do Monday. So I'm like, well, lock that in at least. That's the most important thing. Then had some ambiguity about trying to find placeholders for Tuesday because Nick couldn't do it. He was flying somewhere else. And eventually found someone else, David Gabay, to cover my Tuesday shifts. And then, like, emailed Jack Goldfinger, the Magic Castle booker. It's always that good rule for life is, like, if you're working for or with people and you encounter a problem, as much as possible, try to also then present them with a solution. Like, letting someone know of a problem is much more palatable if you're also offering a solution to that problem. So I always strive to do that, and in this case, managed to. So that worked out.
Yeah, I always feel bad when I have to cancel and I don't have anybody to replace me. That's happened a handful of times this year, and it's like not usually what I try to do because you're just throwing somebody under the bus. And the nice thing about the castle is it's in living in LA, you have many, many different magicians who work there that you can call and say, hey, what are you doing? Fill in for me. Easier solution.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good. I'm glad you're back and alive and you made it.
Yeah, me too.
Not stranded.
Well, then it got, and then there were more twists because then the Tuesday began with a 4:30 a.m. wake up. Then it was three flights, four airports. And then like on the Miami, I got delayed for like, I was like in Miami for about 8 hours, just waiting for the first plane to LA from Miami was like 5 p.m. So I got there early because the only flight out of Martinique was at 6 a.m. So I'm just sitting in Miami airport for ages. Then that flight got delayed. Then the Miami to LA flight had an actual bona fide medical emergency. Like, is there a doctor on the plane moment?
That's happened before.
Luckily, the first time I'd seen it happen in person. And it was someone just fainted, passed out. And they were okay in the end. Like, there were two nurses on the plane who were like, yep, we got this. And made sure the person was okay. So it was a dramatic day. And then because of the delays, I didn't get home until basically midnight LA time. So it's this whole insane day of traveling. But then, because I'm working on something actually really scary, difficult, exciting, cool, you know, out of my comfort zone in an interesting, exciting way this week at the castle, I had a whole bunch of like props and things I still needed to build. I'd been doing as much as I could in the weeks leading up to it. But because inspiration really only coalesces at the last minute, I then landed, went to my apartment, spent like another couple of hours building and engineering props, then spent the entire Wednesday just in full triage mode going, okay, there's no way I can get everything I want done. What can we get done to get it over the line in time for the first show tonight? And actually did pretty well. Got a lot of stuff done. The shows went really well, really excitingly. We'll get to the story of what I'm doing and why. But it was just the most frenetic, insane time. And now it's Friday, which is It's weird. It's the third day of shows, but it's Friday. In my head, it's Wednesday because you're so used to starting on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And things are, I'm still exhausted. I've not yet caught up on my sleep debt from the last week of everything. But
I just like to point out, you call it inspiration based on location. I call it poor planning. But you know, I mean, what? Apples and oranges.
A little from column A, a little from column B. The what is it? I call a spade a digging utility implement.
I should get this out of the way now. I have a show. Mm-hmm. If you're near Michigan, I have a show in Ferndale at Go Comedy Theater on December 27th. But I found out there's only like 5 tickets left. So by the time you're hearing this, it may be sold out. So, which is a good problem to have. I forgot to mention it on, I think, the last episode. So it was like, it was one of those things where it wasn't selling too well.
You clearly didn't need to.
I know. Well, it wasn't selling too well. And then my wife had this great idea to make it a benefit show for the Detroit Creative Project, which is a really cool organization here in Michigan that goes into Detroit public schools and brings improv training and theater training and arts training to schools and public locations that have, you know, had their arts budget slashed or, you know, taken away. So it's a great organization. And, you know, once we announced that, tickets started selling, which is great. So it all worked out in the end. So if you happen to want to go and support a good cause, go ahead, check it out. And the other thing is our buddy Taylor Hughes has a show. Oh, cripes. I didn't write down the date. Oh, no.
I think if you Google Taylor Hughes show, it might work.
I'm looking it up right now because I'll never forgive myself if I get it wrong. It's January. Hold for internet. January 7th. It's a Tuesday.
Nick calls this promo. I call it poor planning.
Good callback. It's at Dynasty Typewriter, 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. He's doing two shows, and he's taping. He's having the guts to tape his own comedy special and magic special, and so this is a taping that. And he said the 7 o'clock selling really well, the 9 o'clock selling pretty decently. So I think both of those will be sold out relatively soon. So check it out. It's TaylorHughes.com.
So yet another thing that we didn't really need to mention. Probably would have sold fine without it.
Yeah, I know. I'd feel bad though for some reason, you know.
No, it's
not enough people came.
It's a cool, exciting thing. I didn't know Taylor was doing that.
That's awesome. It's exciting, and I think it's gonna put a nice kick in our butt to do something similar. So it's a good thing. Yeah. I just saw I'm exhausted too. I realized I didn't eat anything today, and I just saw the new Star Wars. And I'm exhausted and kind of still soaking all that in because that's kind of my one claim to nerddom. I enjoy the comic book movies. It's not really my cup of tea. I'll go and see it and I'm like, that's fun. But Star Wars has always been kind of this like nerdy thing I've clung to my whole life. And so it was kind of a big deal to see how they wrapped everything up in the saga, and some choices were made.
Right, this is the third of this trilogy, isn't it?
Yeah, and the idea was to wrap up all 9 movies, you know, at least until Disney runs out of money and needs to make more. But
aren't they already? Probably.
it was good, you know. I'm not gonna say anything. I'm not gonna give any spoilers, but I'm just gonna say, you know, it's neat to be to be a part of history. I went with my brother who came in town from New York and my dad who got me into Star Wars. And on our way home, we saw a terrible accident. So it was a night and, you know, holidays. What can you do?
Yeah. What was you made one of my favorite ever Facebook posts a couple of years ago, which was I may not get the wording exactly right, but it was like, fact, December kills 3 magicians every year or something like that.
I don't even remember that, so I appreciate you remembering that.
I think it might have been December kills 3 magicians every year, fact. It was just the most just insane season.
Well, I just finished up an insane season. I was in, you know, last two, I did your gig, if I'm going backwards, so LA, Montana, Salt Lake City connection, Vegas, the night before, three nights at Comedy Magic Club. Before that, we were in Albuquerque for three nights doing our show. Then before that, Comedy Magic Club, two nights. And then Magic Castle filling in for Blake because he did something similar. He had to double book himself. Oh, yeah. And yeah, I mean, and that's a relatively light schedule as a magician for December because I don't have another gig until my one on the 27th and then New Year's Eve. And I have a week off now, but I'm looking at, I mean, you see all these guys just posting of being in different corporate Christmas parties every single night. And I don't know. I mean, I did a weekend of corporate stuff and it nearly killed me. So these guys are, it's insane. It's a crazy season.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been able to book those. I'm basically just unbookable for sort of normal conventional events.
No, you're bookable, Simon. You just don't return emails.
Yeah. It's, well, I mean, that's why. That's all. I didn't say what made me unbookable.
Simon, the reason I cling to you, Simon, is because you're an amazing magician who hasn't realized how marketing works. So,
yeah, pretty much. Oh, no, I know how it works. I just know I'm terrible at it and I hate it. Just like the double whammy. Like, if I was good at it and hated it, then, all right, at least I'm good at it. Or if I loved it but was bad at it, I'd have motivation to get into it and eventually get better. But I'm both bad at it and hate it at the same time, which is a recipe for not getting booked.
See, but I'm very lucky.
Other projects are exciting.
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that I have kind of snuck my way into three different corporate bookers over the years that have booked me and the gigs have gone well, so they keep booking me. Because A, I return emails, and B, they'll know I do a good job because I've proven myself, hopefully continue to prove myself. But if I was doing it on my own, like I know many guys are, I'm terrible at it. I'm a bad salesman. I'm in the same boat as you. I've just gotten kind of lucky in the sense that I've gotten to work with some great agencies that book a lot of entertainment, and hopefully that continues so I can keep paying the bills.
Yeah. Whereas, I mean, I think one of the reasons I find it so hard to return emails vis-a-vis gigs is I just don't know how to quote a price. And people have given me all the advice. I've read all the books. I've read all the theory. I've spoken to everyone. None of it actually helps because there is no number that's actually a real number. It's all made up. Mm-hmm. And my engineer scientist brain just can't deal with that.
Yeah, and so, I think I'm
basically
wired the
my
same
business
way.
Plan, yeah. My business plan now is get into situations where I don't have to negotiate a price. Where, like, there's a price, like, e.g. you, coming through with that Santa Ana gig, and you're like, this is how much it's offering. Take it or leave it. And I'm like, I'll take it. Great. I didn't have to figure out a price. Like, I never want to be in a position where I have to make up a number, because I just won't. My brain will freeze up. I won't be able to do it, and I won't return the email, because I don't know how to reply to it.
Yeah, and
so
I did
into
the
projects
same
where
thing.
That avoid that.
Yeah, the agent that booked us for that Santa Ana gig, it was like, okay, this is what they offer. And like, oh, good. I don't have to negotiate.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the best. That's why. All right. So here's the other interesting story of working out ways to actually have a career in showbiz without actually having to quote prizes to anyone is the reason I'm doing the insane, crazy set I'm doing at the castle is the set I'm doing at the castle. So, all right. This ties a lot of things together. So we did Magic Smackdown in Bloomington with Chad and the team over there, a Bloomington Playwrights project. The reason I knew those guys, that team, those people, was because I had worked with them previously on my own solo show, Glitches in Reality, which is basically a 90-minute full-on show that I've been working on for about 7 years now. This has been actually my baby. This is like my big creative thing that almost no one's really seen because it's been happening in the background between all the other things and has never been able to make money because it's a show that really needs to be in a theater in a very specific kind of room. You can't just kind of go and do it at a venue, and it's a long show. It's really a full evening experience, but it's kind of the sum total of really everything I've ever done and worked on in magic. Like, it's the magnum opus attempt so far, right? Whether it ends up being that, who knows? And that show really started to hit its strides when working with Chad and the team. They gave that kind of outside perspective that really elevated it. I'd managed to get it kind of 80% of the way there on my own, but I'd stalled out. I'd actually taken a couple of years off it because I just had burnt out trying to get it over the finish line. That became much cooler, and now I'm actually really excited. There is now potential. And this show, but the problem is, doesn't matter if you've got a great show, if you can't sell it, market it, get someone to tour it, promote it, produce it, which again has always been a weakness. I'm a bad networker. I'm not good at going out there and finding those things. But someone in LA, a really good friend, collaborator, has kind of now gone, all right, I see this vision. I'm going to help produce this. And we are, this is like 98% confirmed. It's not 100% yet, but doing a massive run of it, month-long run in LA, actually in Oceanside, so halfway between LA and San Diego, next June. And this is going to be the whole thing. It's going to be a massive production. It's probably the biggest thing I've worked on solo show-wise ever. This is really exciting and very stressful and all this stuff. And what I've been doing at the castle this week is a first very, very rough first draft of an of condensing that whole 90-minute narrative show into an 18-minute mini version. There's that theory that any story can be told in any length, just depending on how much you condense it. And so the idea is to have a short version of the show we can use as like a preview or a promo or a demo version, because the full thing needs a whole theater and a, like a week-long bump in. You can't just do it anywhere. So this is me attempting to put a micro version of it together that can be done anywhere as a promo or a demo or a preview version to use in the marketing in the months leading up to the actual big one. So it's this very long, elaborate game that all comes down to why was I building these props on Wednesday so intensely? Because it's like, want to do this to do this to enable that to eventually get this thing to happen. Because then I can hopefully just make money off ticketing revenue without having to actually do corporate gigs. And that'd be amazing.
That's amazing. So, that's good. So you're doing your own little Taylor Hughes experiment. That's great.
Yeah, pretty much. And this won't be for TV. There's no televised element. This is very much just a live theater show that will. I really care about this show. This is very much like an expression of me as a human being and all that jazz. And you know, this is very much my spirit put into show form. So it's not just a sort of commercial plan. It's something I really care about putting into the world in a good way.
Sounds like you're treating it like Del Gaudio did. You know, I remember hearing him talk about it, he was going, you know, I'm not going to be a household name. I'm just trying to do a show that I really, you know, want to put my heart and soul into, like you were saying. And there's something pretty, pretty noble about that, if I will say, because you're not, you know, you're not going to get mainstream attention with it because it is so unique and different. But I think you are going to be able to create, and I've seen portions of it. You know, I've seen it in iterations, and I think you're onto something. Yeah. And I think it's going to be pretty swell. Hopefully, you know, gets picked up and, you know, is able to do like an off-Broadway run or something similar to Del Gaudio. That'd be great.
That would be, yeah, that's exactly it. It's very much the attempting to do something in that same vein that Derek did. It's, similar thing. I never want this to be a massive thing. It's a show that would only work for a small to medium theater. This could never play arenas, nor would I want it to. This is just something that I really care about. I hope it'll be something special and beautiful, and I would love to like get some money and recognition from doing it as well as a side benefit.
Yeah, sure.
So those are all the visions. So this Castle Week is one small step, another small step along the already very long path of steps towards one day making this thing a cool thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to use the castle to do. I think our friends like Ramirez and, you know, anybody who's doing kind of anything interesting with magic is will take a place like the castle where it's very easy to coast and very easy to go, all right, well, I got to do 25 shows, so we're just going to make this easy. I think it's almost like you're not making a huge amount of money working the castle, so you might as well use it as a workshop to get to generate some great material. And I think anybody who has the ability to do that much time on stage and really, like, I just did 3 shows for you on Monday there. And I, in the middle, worked on a new, it's an old bit, but it's a new version of an old bit. And it was great because it's like, I tried it 3 different ways and I was able to see what the reactions were. And you don't get to do that, especially like during corporate season right now, where, you know, my Montana show was in, you know, a ballroom with, you know, the round tables of death with half the people looking in the wrong way. And it's like, that's no location to try out new material because if it works or if it fails, you don't know why. It's, you know, it's purely circumstantial.
Yeah. Well, that's something I've been realizing recently that this, it's such a critical thing to have access to high frequency, low pressure performing in order to develop, both in terms of developing material and developing your own skills as a performer. And it's so hard to find. And that's what we had. I never thought I'd find myself kind of missing Macau in a way. But God, I have found myself wishing I could have that kind of thing for a week or two here and there, not like 3 months of insanity. But like to be able to go into a week and just smash out like 3, 4, 5, 8 sets a night because that's the only, that's, you improve so much quicker when you have access to that, where you're not so caring about any one set because you've got like another five if something goes wrong. So you can afford to experiment and try things and flex things and go with that.
Yeah. I mean, there, I think it reaches a point. I mean, at least in my case, by like a week or two in, then I start slipping into patterns and stop being inventive. But I think there's like a finite amount of time where you can workshop something to death. And then,
yeah, like that's the thing. Yeah. A week of intense, again, high frequency, low pressure gigs is perfect. And it's, that's one of the things that makes the castle such an asset. Now, like the first time you perform at the castle, then it's not low pressure. Then it's super high pressure. It's incredibly exciting. It's incredibly illustrious. But then once you've sort of proven yourself and done it a bunch of times, now the pressure's not there as much. So you can afford to kind of experiment a little, like I, you know, like we've been doing.
I discovered
these potentially greater things.
I discovered my new favorite thing, and it, maybe it says a lot about me and my ego, but just showing up. And like the booking director, Jack, and like the staff, everybody's just so thankful that I'm there. Like, oh, thank you so much for covering for Simon. That's so nice of you. That's, that's such a great spot to be in as a performer. Like, I did my first show and I didn't even know it, I had a few friends in the back and Jack was watching. And I was just like in such a state of, yeah, whatever, I'll just have fun. And I destroyed
this.
And I always do okay, but I rarely destroy. And it was, it felt good to, and that just, I think, simply came from, you know, everybody going, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing how it's so often those times where you're just feeling zero pressure that you actually do the best job. It unleashes things in you that would normally be held back by the nerves or the nervous tension. It's
one of my favorite improv teachers said, you're always going to book the commercial that shoots in the middle of Iowa for very little money, because you go into that.
You don't care.
You go into that audition. You're like, yeah, great. I don't care. See what happens.
No problem. Do my job. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It is so easy to care too much and or to care too little, because you see people who actually don't care enough and then just do a sloppy job and actually do a bad job. There's this weird sort of happy middle ground of just the right amount of shits to give.
It's like
the optimum number of shits to give. It's difficult to find it, to hone in and not be over or under.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is I think I can honestly say this is the first year where I've, you know, and I recently was chatting with Matt Donnelly, who works on Fool Us, and he, through a friend, Shady, was giving some great advice as to, okay, here's probably why you haven't gotten the show. Here's what they're looking for. And so I submitted something different. And I, you know, as usual, there's a 90% chance, you know, it's not going to get on. But it's certainly the first year where I've gone, that's okay. I don't feel the pressure of it like I have in the years past, because I don't know. Hopefully it's just a more healthier location to be in. Of course I want to get on, and of course I want to prove that I can do the show. But it's not life or death like it used to be. And I think that just comes from with time and doing this and realizing that all this is just pretend. So
I have noticed that as a general theme in life, the cruel irony that you tend to get things almost exactly at the point where you finally give up on giving a shit about getting them. You're like, you know what? I don't even care anymore. I don't even give a shit now.
Yeah.
And then you get it and you're like, oh, yay. But the thing is, you generally don't care anymore. So it no longer has that excitement that it would have had if you'd got it back when you really cared about it.
Well, it's hilarious. We kind of experienced that this week on a project where you and I are working on. And it was exactly how you described it. It was like, oh, cool. Yeah, great. Of course. Of course this is happening right now.
Yeah. It's exciting to have it, but actually almost more annoying than exciting.
Yeah, it's like, fuck you, universe. How dare you give me an opportunity so often.
I think there is eventually not just making peace with that, but actively embracing that in a zen-like way of going, yeah, that's all right, that's the way it works.
Yeah. And I genuinely you know, still want the thing to happen and succeed, but I now have the quote-unquote wisdom to look at it and go, you know, it's
all right, it's fine.
Funny timing.
Things are okay. We have food. We have shelter. We have companionship. Life's all right. It's okay. It's like,
I experienced
epic fame will not make you happier.
I experienced that last night.
So you don't need it.
At a cell phone shop, we were trying to swap in to get a new iPhone, and you know, we just had terrible customer service, and it was one of the first times I've ever kind of like wanted to go off on a guy or wanted to like tell him off, but I didn't. I just walked out of the store and kept it to myself because I'm introverted. I got in the car. I'm like, wait, what is this? Nothing. It's exactly what you said. Like, we have our health, we have food, we have water. We had a nice meal. We had a wonderful evening with the family. This guy who gave us terrible customer service, it doesn't matter. It's okay.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be affecting me. And, I think you need to look at kind of larger situations like that too.
And I mean, obviously this is us saying this in a place of calm and relaxation rather than, you know, cut to 2 days later, we'll both be like, God damn it.
Hours before or a couple days before, you know, I was screaming in my office because like three things like piled on my lap as we're leaving for a month. Like we're now in Michigan for a couple of weeks and then we're getting on a ship and we don't get back to LA till like mid-January. And, you know, I'm planning all this stuff and all these weird things fall into my lap. And, you know, my wife is like, what's going on? And I'm like, I just don't want to deal with this right now. Cause sometimes it just all seems to pile up and the only, way to look at it is with rage.
True that.
But it's okay. I do have to run. We're going to make this a quick episode. I didn't realize how little time I had.
Get it in there.
But have a good rest of the week at the Magic Castle.
Well, do we have a couple of minutes for pro tips?
I don't have a pro tip. You talk about your pro tip and I'll think of one. I thought of three week and I forgot to write them all down.
Yeah, no, I've actually forgotten mine as well, but I'm sure we can figure out something in the space of 30 seconds while we cut to the theme music.
Pro tips.
Oh yeah, that means I have to edit this in now.
That was pro tips. I know I had a bunch and now I've forgotten all of them as well. Here's the pro tip.
Great.
This is another, wait, did we already talk about this one? What did we talk about last time? Have we talked about like the, how to fold up your, boarding passes inside your passport?
No.
Have I said that on this? Okay. Here's my pro tip.
Cause they're always too
this
big.
Is another,
it goes in your pocket into bins.
Exactly, and it gets all messed up. So this is the pro tip. This is another specifically international travel pro tip, because that's when you've got your passport and you get your boarding passes. You need your boarding passes and your passport. So the pro tip is every time you get a boarding pass, the only bit of that pass that needs to be uncreased is the barcode section. So basically fold the boarding pass like along the middle, look at the barcode, fold it along the nearest edge of the barcode so you can make it as close to in half as possible without creasing the barcode. Then put that boarding pass inside your passport, and that can now fit in your pocket. So you now have your nice little neat passport-sized package of everything you need. As an extension of that, if I'm doing a flight that has more than one boarding pass, I put the next boarding pass, like the one for the flight I'm about to go on, in the ID page of the passport, and then the other two folded inside the back cover. So all three are folded up, avoiding creasing the barcode. All three are in the passport, but if I can just pull out my passport, flop it open at the ID page, unfold the boarding pass, and just hand that to whoever needs it, like the gate check-in person or whatever. So it's always just there securely in your pocket in a nice little package ready to go at any given moment. And then once you're on that flight, you then bring the next boarding pass to put that in the ID page, put the other one at the back. And you've always got what you need all in one place. You know where it is. They're not getting all crumpled up because they're just folded neatly along that one line. There you go.
Boom. Pro tip. I guess this is a pro tip. Mine was, I was doing a corporate show on Saturday and I'm really
I knew we'd remember.
I think I'm just pulling something off in the back of my brain that I thought of during the show. Just kind of being aware when you're in that sort of situation where it's kind of a strange, where literally the audience is forced to watch you. Everybody had dinner and it's like, okay, now there's a magic show you didn't know about. For me, it was knowing, like, I was realizing my silent stuff wasn't working too well because it's a ballroom and there's no stage theatrical lighting and it's just me standing on some platforms and, you know, round tables. So I kind of quickly beelined to more talking and more interaction with the crowd. And I just listened to what they were giving me and listened to how they were reacting. So I cut some things kind of on the fly, which is
even a year ago, I did a show similarly, and I didn't listen. I was keeping in silent stuff just because I wanted to do, you know, all of my material that I had planned. And sometimes you just need to know when to cut stuff on the fly. So my pro tip would be just listen to what the audience is reacting to if it's kind of a weird situation.
Well, I mean, the extension of that is just always be present with your audience, by which I mean whoever it is you're interacting with, whether it's in a personal situation, a social situation, actually paying attention to the other person or people, going, where is this other person or group coming from? Mm-hmm. Where can we meet in the middle? Being present, yeah, paying attention and actually listening.
That's a much more eloquent way to say that, so thank you.
This is why we're a good team, Nick. We're a good team.
I realized, like, especially at Santa Ana, like, because I am more introverted, I will just send you off to the client, or I will send you to the tech person and go, Simon, deal with this, because you're really good at, like, bringing people in and, like, hey, how's it going? Good. So this is what we need. And me, I'm like, I'm just going to set it up, and I'll wait till Simon is done talking.
Good team. I like it.
Teamwork.
Got this stuff covered. Yeah.
I'm going to wrap this up. Have a good set of shows tonight.
No worries. And I'm going to go and build more replacement props. The other thing that happened on Wednesday night is after the first two shows, one of the critical props got destroyed, just smashed, broken. So the third show, I had to, like, improvise a totally different set because I hadn't had time to make backups of the prop. Like, it's a glass bottle with stuff in it. And so I spent the whole next day at least I have a couple of backups now because they just take forever to make. It's so intricate and time consuming.
Is that ship in a bottle photo you posted?
It is. It's a bunch of things. One's a ship in a bottle. The other is, spoiler alert, a coin in a bottle. And coin in a bottle has been a magic thing forever, but this is like a real one. It's real. It's an actual coin and an actual bottle that someone can keep and examine because it really is real. It's not an illusion, which is such an exciting thing that I've been...
It's kind of your
end show with that.
It's kind of your white whale. I feel like you've been talking about this for years.
It really is. That's better. I've been calling it my windmill, but white whale is a better analogy. That's good shit, Nick.
You know, literature. Good shit. I haven't read the book. I just know how it begins.
This is why we're a good team, Nick. That's why we're a good team. Got this down.
Teamwork. All right. Have a good set of shows.
Peace out.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.